Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Meriwether and Tharp, your source for Georgia divorce. Find them online at theatlantadivorceteam.com.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
You know, I love the preseason college football magazines. I told you that yesterday. We did a little thing yesterday I thought was fun on what the opposing coaches had said about Florida in comparison to Georgia and kind of how that works, the cocktail party coming up on October 31st. I want today for a moment, though, to drill down on something that in the Athlon Sports College Football Preview, the SEC Preview, where they have the Scouting the Bulldog section, opposing coaches size up Georgia. There's one thing in particular that I want to read from one of the anonymous coaches that said about UGA, because in the entirety of this piece, it's the only individual player on the Georgia roster that got mentioned in any of this. My assumption is, because there's a lot of kind of sentences cobbled together, this must be a handful of coaches they get some quotes from. But of all the quotes they mentioned, it was all, you know, kind of generic speak about Georgia, with the exception of this sentence right here. The nose tackle, Jordan Davis, is dominant. Now, isn't that interesting? Isn't that an interesting way to say that? And if it's true, and I believe there's a very good chance that it is, isn't that an interesting look at Jordan Davis for the upcoming year? Because, listen, I have a lot of people who watch and listen to this show who are quite plugged into Georgia. If I brought, you know, like they do focus groups sometimes, if I brought 100 very well plugged in Georgia fans and made sure it was representative of the entirety of Dog Nation, if I sat them down in this room and started asking focus group market research style questions of, hey, who's the best player on the Georgia defense? I think that you would get a lot of names represented. In fact, I think it's interesting that you would get such a variety of names that get mentioned. This is not like one of these deals where, like, say, at LSU, almost every LSU fan assumes that Derek Stingley is the best player in the LSU defense, because he probably clearly is. Or at Alabama, where a preponderance of Alabama fans probably assume that Dylan Moses, assuming he's healthy, is the best player on that defense, because it just seems obvious that that's true. You can probably cite other examples there as well. The Georgia defense, which will be expected to be among the very best units in all of college football, start asking folks who the best player on this defense is. Some people may say Richard LeCount. Some people may say Eric Stokes. Those rising sophomores, N'Kobe Dean, Trayvon Walker, Nolan Smith, are going to get their fair share of opinions. Aziz Ojulari. It's weird that I've mentioned five names, haven't mentioned Ojulari, because to a lot of people, he may be the one that gets mentioned. I don't know how many of those people in kind of our fictitious focus group would mention Jordan Davis, though. And I think that what the opposing coach says here is potentially true. That Davis himself, if you're looking for a dominant Georgia player, Davis himself may be the one to look at. Davis himself, because he plays in the interior of the Georgia defensive line and can be easily overlooked, because sometimes it's hard to measure that position group with stats. Maybe people don't quite realize just how dominant Jordan Davis is. But if it's not known now, there is quite the chance that it could be known by the time this season's all said and done, because it's not just anonymous coach quoted in Athlon Sports who kind of sees it that way. I saw the Pro Football, the Pro Football Network, who kind of does some draft preview stuff. I saw them also starting to show some love to Jordan Davis here as well. He was, according to the Pro Football Network, the number 7 interior defensive lineman for the upcoming 2021 NFL draft. Now, he doesn't have to leave. He's only going to be a junior, but he was the number 7 guy. In fact, let me read you the quote from what the writer, it's Matthew Valdovinos, I believe I'm saying that correctly, from the Pro Football Network. Here is what he said about Jordan Davis, their number 7 defensive lineman for the 2021 NFL draft. Jordan Davis is an elite run defender, the writer says, who lacks pass rush productivity. However, I think Davis has the length and athletic ability to project him as an above-average pass rusher when he develops his hands and counters a bit. He possesses the versatility to play the 3 technique or the nose, or he could even, I thought this was kind of interesting, even play the 5 technique in certain defensive alignments. His combination of physical upside and scheme versatility make him my highest-graded interior lineman from the SEC. Now, that's a pretty nice compliment to throw Jordan Davis way of, hey, when I'm looking at the start of the season from a draft perspective, certainly admittedly, but the guy from Pro Football Network says, of all the guys in the interior lineman in the SEC, which is a pretty deep league, typically speaking, for defensive linemen, he's my highest graded guy to start the season. So this, I think, leads us to a couple of interesting conversation points. First of all, I think it speaks to a really good job of Kirby Smart, the Georgia coaching staff, for doing something that maybe doesn't always get a ton of credit. So here's the thing that even Georgia haters, rivals to the program, fans of rival schools, here's the one thing that everyone's forced to admit. Boy, Kirby Smart can recruit. And there's a way of doing this online or among opposing fans on message boards and things like this where, boy, Kirby Smart can recruit pretty quickly gets turned into a backhanded compliment because it pretty quickly turns into, yeah, Kirby can recruit, but, and then there's some sort of addendum attached to that sentence of how well does he develop or what does he do, you know, in terms of winning a national championship, things like that. However, the presence of Jordan Davis would seem to confound the expectations of a lot of people who assume that Kirby Smart's only an acquirer of talent. Because in the case of Davis, you have two things seemingly going on. On the one hand, you pretty obviously have some development taking place. Davis has grown. He was good in 2018, but he grew into an even better player in 2019 than he had been in 2018 by almost anyone's estimation that was watching things closely. So pretty clearly, you have some player development that's going on. Admittedly, some more, and we'll get to that. Admittedly, a need for some more, and we'll get to more of that in a moment. But pretty clearly, there is some player development going on here. However, the other thing that I think you got to give a little bit of credit here to, and this is the thing that probably flies below the surface, we just don't think about this particular aspect of football very much because so much of what Kirby does, I forget who used this line first, but it's true. A program like Georgia doesn't recruit, it selects. You know, it just sort of chooses the players that it wants, typically speaking, because they get so many yeses from recruits. However, in addition to the selecting of the very elite of the elite, in the case of Davis, who was a much lower rated recruit than a lot of the names that we mention around here, there had to be some scouting going on. There had to be some work to be done to identify exactly what a guy like Jordan Davis brought to the table. Now, there was a moment last season, around about middle of the year or so, when Smart kind of went in a little bit of detail of exactly what they saw from Davis, the terrific interior defensive lineman for the Bulldogs, what they saw from him on the recruiting trail. You don't always get Kirby Smart to be as introspective as he kind of chose to be here, but here is Smart telling the story about how they identified Jordan Davis, how it has led to him being, as opposing coach in Athlon says, dominant defensive lineman, as scout for Pro Football Network says, highest graded interior lineman in the SEC. How did we get to this point? Well, Kirby Smart told that story last season. Let you hear this.
Yeah, we were excited because we watched him, you know, do workouts. We saw him go through bags. We saw his agility, and it was just like it jumped off the screen. And my history has been someone that big, that athletic, has been a really good player. It shocked me that he was not pursued heavier. I don't know what the right word is. But he was in the Charlotte area and wasn't, you know, he was recruited by good schools, but I think a lot of people thought he might be an offensive tackle because he played some of that in high school and he was really athletic. But we just saw natural talent, natural ability, intelligent kid, great mom. I mean, just wonderful kid. And he still hasn't reached his full potential. That's the hardest part for him to acknowledge because he's very athletic for a large man. And we got to get the most out of him.
Let me try to give you kind of a very quick analogy for a moment. Have you ever coached in one of these youth baseball leagues where there's like the player evaluations and everybody gets ranked and you kind of make your drafting on the ranking, but there's always a small handful of players that for whatever reason aren't available to go through the evaluation period? And I think a lot of times in these rec leagues, the league gets won to the extent that a, you know, youth baseball league can be won. It gets won by who gets lucky with the players down there at the bottom of the list that didn't go through evaluations. You don't know if they're good or not, and they just kind of get divvied amongst the rest of the teams. I think there's a similar thing that goes on in college football sometimes because for the most part, you kind of get your fair share of elite 4- and 5-star players, and then everybody's got a couple of players, even the Alabama-Georgia level, a couple of players who weren't quite as highly recruited players. Well, my gosh, if one of them turns out to be a dominant defensive lineman to go along with the rest of the 5-stars you have, at a certain point in time, you have truly, truly stacked an elite level of talent, and in Jordan Davis's case, that may be indeed what has happened. However, I guess this isn't all perfect happy talk because while the Georgia program does deserve a ton of credit for finding Davis, and to this point in time, it deserves a ton of credit for developing where he is right now, it is fair to point out, as the Pro Football Network said, there is more work that can be done, more technique that can be added to make him a better interior pass rusher, and this kind of goes along with everything that goes with the Georgia front seven right now. The Georgia defense has been really, really good. It's been excellent. Yielding yards, very few teams yield fewer. Yielding points, very few teams are stingier. However, there is a next step for this Georgia defense to take. You need more sacks. You need more tackles for loss. As we spoke about yesterday from the piece at ESPN.com, one of the missing pieces for Georgia and its national championship pursuit is that havoc rate. What are you doing behind the line of scrimmage defensively? Well, if you want to zero in on one of the most important players for answering that question to the positive, making sure Georgia is as dominant in the front seven as it is with its secondary, Jordan Davis is a good place to work. Did have 2.5 sacks a year ago, so he's coming into his own as a player that's more than just a run stopper for Georgia. But as guys like that develop, so goes the Georgia defense. And Davis as a dominant defensive lineman, if that comes to full fruition to the extent that it's possibly that it could, then maybe this Georgia defense is going to be pretty dominant there as well. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily. We are the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, and we are so glad to have you with us no matter how you get to us today. Live on video, 10 a.m., Dog Nation Facebook and YouTube. We are coming soon again on Twitter. Can't wait to re-unveil that to all of you. Radio at noon, Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref. Love my friends there in the Classic City. Obviously, it's a podcast, the Apple Player, the Google Player, Spotify. WorldFamousDogNation.com will post the show each and every day. We just, you know, listen, however you get to us, the fact that during this very weird offseason, so many of you have continued to choose to connect with us here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Meriwether and Tharp, well, that just makes me really, really happy, and I'm really grateful for that, and incredibly grateful to my friends at Meriwether and Tharp for making the show possible. And I don't say that lightly. I consider a lot of folks there at Meriwether and Tharp to be good friends of mine, not just because of their partnership here with Dog Nation Daily, but because I have seen firsthand, I have experienced, just hearing stories, the work that they do on a really important issue. Listen, the fact of the matter is, divorce is something that some of the people listening to me right now either have dealt with or could be on the verge of dealing with. And that leads to a lot of unanswered questions about your finances, your relationship with your children, my gosh, a million other things that maybe I can't even think about. Well, listen, all of that's on your mind right now if you find yourself on the verge of that situation. I have great respect for that. And because I respect you so much, this is one of the few pieces of advice I'll ever try to give you. Make sure you have a strong advocate on your side, someone that's going to fight for you, someone that knows all the nooks and crannies of the law, someone that can use that knowledge to your advantage. That's what my friends at Meriwether and Tharp do for you. They will be tireless advocates for you. But you got to take the first step. You got to find them online. It's theatlantadivorceteam.com. That's theatlantadivorceteam.com. That'll get you in touch with Meriwether and Tharp. They are your source for Georgia divorce, and they can help make you whole again. So reach out to them, my friends at Meriwether and Tharp. All right, I want to deal with something that was completely off the radar for me. And by the way, we'll get Tony Barnhart, great SEC reporter from the SEC Network, his own website, and just a countless other number of media entities. We'll get Tony here in a moment. Before that, let me just deal with some news. This was like completely off the radar for me yesterday, but our buddy Jeff Sintel wrote at DogNation.com that five-star cornerback Tony Grimes is apparently dealing with a little bit of a dilemma. Let me just read a couple sentences from Jeff here. This is not going to be on the screen. I'm just going to read this from DogNation.com to make sure that I kind of sum it all up. It says, Jeff says that Tony Grimes, who is already set to enroll early in January of 2021, he'd be an early enrollee for the upcoming recruiting cycle, is currently probing the possibility of summer graduation and enrolling at the school of his choice in August, essentially reclassifying himself as a 2020 recruit. And the reason that Jeff says that Grimes is considering doing this is because of the uncertain situation right now when it comes to high school football in the state of Virginia and Grimes' home state. And this just kind of like, whoa, what is going on here? Difficult to figure all of this out. Obviously, you can watch Before the Hedges presented by Kroger from Jeff yesterday. I'm sure he had more details on that there. We'll get Jeff on our program coming up on Friday. That's tomorrow. So we'll hear more from Jeff there on that. But, you know, the notion of Grimes reclassifying, or at least the potential of reclassifying, it's not a given that he would, is like one of these, like, let's see if we can regain our footing here for a moment. The one thing I've seen a lot of people say to me on Twitter about this is, and just some other Georgia fans I've talked about, if indeed he were to reclassify, it is not obvious, and I want to say this as kindly as I can, it is not obvious that would benefit Georgia, just given the fact that, you know, Georgia's already got a lot of depth at its cornerback spot, and by my count, it's got about 115 guys on scholarship at the moment. So, and I'm obviously exaggerating that, but you know, where is this going? What does this mean? I did spend some time looking into the situation with the Virginia high school football this morning to kind of find out where that was. I saw a quote from, I guess, like the guy that basically runs the high school sports world in Virginia from the Roanoke Times. I think we can throw that quote on the screen. I will read that. This is Billy Hahn, who's the Virginia High School League executive director. In terms of football returning for the state of Virginia, he says, I don't think there's a great possibility of opening sports on time right now, full blown. He's not speaking about Grimes. He's just speaking about the entirety of the state. There could be delayed opening where fall sports could be a scenario, but I think there's a real possibility where we could have some sort of social distancing stagger type schedule through the first semester. He's talking about classroom stuff there, which could make it impossible to do any sports through the fall. Once again, that's Billy Hahn, Virginia High School League executive director. And that quote is pretty representative of a lot of the newspaper research that I did, where most of the concerns about Virginia high school football, the best that I can tell, kind of center around unanswered questions about when classes themselves are going to restart. And I guess my opinion is that ultimately the state of Virginia may end up falling in line with the rest of the country and being more normal than not. Maybe Grimes sticking around for senior year might give Georgia a better shot at this. That's obviously speculation on my part there at the end, but maybe that might help Georgia in the long run. But it is obviously true, based on the quote that I just read, there's some questions about, you know, will Virginia high school football be played? And I guess if it's not, that'll put a decision in the lap of Tony Grimes, a recruit of a lot of importance for Georgia. So we'll continue to follow this story. It's Dog Nation Daily, presented today by Meriwether and Tharp. We'll hear from Kirby Smart on his own players returning a bit later on, but for now, on everything going on around the SEC, including here at the University of Georgia, let's talk to a guy who knows the subject well, our good friend Tony Barnhart. It's been a while since we've had Tony Barnhart on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Meriwether and Tharp. But this time of year, it's really, really fun to do that because obviously Tony knows the situation around UGA really well, but he's also very attuned to what other experts are saying about the rest of the SEC and the rest of the country. So let's do that right now. Tony, thank you so much for spending some time with us. Hope you continue to stay safe and healthy, and I hope that you're enjoying what is kind of a weird start to summer, but nonetheless, a summer nonetheless. Hope you're doing well.
Thank you, Brandon. We are doing well, and yes, it has been a weird start, to the summer. Usually, I'm getting back from SEC meetings in Destin and sort of taking a little time off and start thinking about the season ahead. But with players rolling in this week, we're all hands on deck.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Let me begin this way, I guess. You know, we do the show every day. We're obviously, you know, neck deep in the storylines around UGA, and we have spent a lot of time talking about the need for Georgia to change its offense, the unanswered questions of how much it will change, the role that Todd Monken plays into that. Now you've got two transfer quarterbacks in some form or fashion over the next couple of years to be a part of that metamorphosis. And as I'm reading, you know, preseason magazines on newsstands or seeing the stuff that's online, a lot of your colleagues and kind of the national media talking about this kind of stuff, it seems like that is the hot topic around UGA there as well. So I guess let me kind of ask you a broad question. You can take it a number of different ways. How much are you hearing other experts question Georgia's willingness to change its offense, and how much do you see that as the key storyline for UGA this upcoming season?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That is the key storyline for Georgia. There's the unknown. You know, Jamie Newman is a very successful quarterback at Wake Forest. He obviously has a great skill set, great athletic ability. Does that translate into him playing against SEC defenses? What's it going to be like working with the coach Monken and building the offense? And what's it going to look like? And are you going to run the RPOs like you say you're going to do that? You know, the offense will be different. How different will it be? And so there's all these varying degrees of things that have people curious about Georgia, because everybody also knows that Georgia is going to have one of the best defenses in the country, and that defense is going to allow them to stay in most games while the offense catches up.
You mentioned Jamie Newman, and then at the end of last week, we also find out that in some form or fashion, JT Daniels involved in the picture. Mm-hmm. We don't know if he's eligible in 2021 or if he gets the eligibility in 2020. You know, let me ask the question this way. How surprised were you to see another quarterback thrown into the picture at Georgia at the end of last week?
Yeah, I was surprised. I would have thought about a lot of spots for JT Daniels. Georgia would not have been one of them because their situation seems to be set. I mean, you've got Jamie Newman's going to be your starting quarterback, but you've got Stetson Bennett. You've got the young man coming in from Jacksonville, Carson. You've got Dwan Mathis, who is finally clear and ready to play. So the quarterback room already looked pretty crowded. So I think that is a surprise. But you know what? You don't turn down the opportunity to get another 4 or 5-star quarterback if he wants to come to your place. And I believe he looked and saw a situation that it's probably going to get better, and knows that he'll be playing around talented people. So it'll be the whole thing, though, Brandon, is does he get a waiver to play? If he doesn't get a waiver to play, then it's a moot point, and he's back next year competing with all the other quarterbacks that will be here next year.
Let me do one, I guess, kind of final point on this, and then we'll talk about a couple different things. So I'm a big believer that change is hard even when you want to change. Ask anyone who's ever tried to quit smoking. Mm-hmm. Certainly an example of that. In Kirby Smart's case, it's a much less serious issue when it comes to his offensive tendencies. The one thing that even someone like me, speaking as a fan who wants to see a little bit of an evolution from Georgia, hard to deny that a very similar philosophy almost worked to the tune of a national championship in 2017. You know, had Georgia gotten past Alabama in 2018 in the SEC championship, who knows what happens after that? As someone who's seen a lot of coaches and, understands a lot of the, kind of the history of this league, where do you kind of come down on the ongoing discussion of, is Kirby Smart truly willing to do this? And is the presence of Todd Monken, an extra quarterback like JT Daniels go along with Jamie Newman, is that a clue that maybe Smart is more willing to kind of make this transformation than maybe some people have given him credit for wanting to be?
Well, yeah, I think he is willing to make the transfer. I think every coach comes at this at their own time period. Okay, Nick Saban finally understood that he was going to have to bring in a guy like Lane Kiffin. Ed Orgeron, who had won 10 games or 9 games the year before, realized that he was going to win 9 or 10 games a year, but he wasn't going to beat Alabama until he made the change, which he did. And so I think every coach comes at it on their own timetable. I think the sheer fact that they brought in Jamie Newman, they brought in Coach Monken, tells you that Kirby Smart's ready for a change. But let's look. The RPO has become an integral part of the game. It used to be sort of that's what you did. You ran the RPOs when you couldn't block people, and you had to compensate for lack of talent on the offensive line and maybe lack of skill players. That's not the case anymore.
Yeah,
I think Kirby Smart, with the people he's hired and what they're doing, has proven that he's ready to change.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. How about the subject of the Florida Gators here for a moment? That's the other team that kind of comes up a lot. And, once again, when you read a lot of these preseason magazines, when you hear certainly opposing fans who kind of pop in and talk to us on a daily basis, there's some growing belief that maybe this is Dan Mullen's breakthrough year of Florida. He's been in the top 10 the last couple of years, but maybe even better than that this upcoming season. Where do you stand on the Gators at the moment? Are they a legitimate threat to Georgia right now?
They are a legitimate threat to Georgia right now. Now, how big of a threat, we're not going to know, because we didn't get to see spring practice. We didn't get to see Jamie Newman, okay? We didn't get to see any of that. So if we had gone through an entire spring practice, we might have been able to make some decisions. But look, veteran coaching staff that's been together for a while, a veteran quarterback in Kyle Trask, they became a much more consistent offense last year when Kyle Trask took over, and Felipe Franks got hurt. So you've got a veteran quarterback. You've got good wide receivers. Todd Grantham is back. The defense is going to be good again. So, yeah, they are a definite challenge to Georgia. The question becomes, if you're a Georgia fan, is Georgia going to fix the areas they feel need to be fixed? Do they get better at wide receiver? Are they going to find all the pieces there on the offensive line to do the rebuilding they got to do? If the answer to all those questions are yes, then I think we expect Georgia. But if they come up short in an area, then that opens the door for Florida.
I want to get your remembrances of two of the SEC legends that passed away this week. Let me squeeze in one more thing before we get there. On the SEC West for a moment, Georgia doesn't play LSU this year. I'm just kind of curious of your thoughts nonetheless. Miles Brennan as a replacement for Joe Burrow. Scott Linehan as a replacement as passing game coordinator for Joe Brady. Is LSU still a national championship contender as the reigning national champions? Or are those losses just too much to overcome for this particular year?
I still think LSU can be a top 10 team, but you're not going to repeat that what you did from an offensive standpoint, maybe ever. Okay, that was a all the stars aligned to put that kind of offense together. But I still think they are the number two or number three team in that division. But time will tell. And look, everybody wanted, coming out of high school, everybody wanted Miles Brennan.
Yeah.
So it's not like this guy's been on their roster. He's just been playing behind guys who are better. And it's going to be, and their athlete, LSU still has the athletes at receiver. They still have them everywhere else. And, I just don't think they're not better than Alabama. I feel confident saying they're not better than Alabama.
We lost two SEC legends this week, one of which had a big tie to Georgia. Obviously, Pat Dye was a great player. Georgia went on to be a terrific coach for Auburn. Johnny Majors, originally, you know, obviously a great player. Tennessee ended up being a coach at Pitt, coach with the Vols. When you think about the legacy of Dye and Majors, and for people like me who came of age in the 80s when those guys were so prominent in this league, how will you remember them, and what are your thoughts on their passing this week?
Oh, they were both old school. They was old school. I think Ivan Mazel wrote that Pat Dye was old school when he was young. I mean, that's just the way that they were brought up. Obviously, Pat Dye is a Georgia graduate who was with Bear Bryant for 9 years, then came back and rose to power at the exact moment that Bear Bryant was losing his and passing away. John Majors wins a national championship. Brandon, I don't know if you knew this or not. You know, John Majors was at Pittsburgh for 4 years.
Yeah,
73 through 76. Three of those 4 years, they played the University of Georgia.
How about that?
They played against the University of Georgia in 73, 75, and in the Sugar Bowl of 1976.
Well, what's weird about that is, and maybe what's weird about that is, maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong, but he only coached against Georgia three times in the 80s at Tennessee. We think about Georgia and Tennessee playing all the time now, but back then it was 80, 81, and not again until 88, if my memory serves me correct on that. So weird how the SEC schedule is so different now from where it used to be way back then when I think for a while we were only playing six conference games.
Well, only six conference games, and Georgia, the same thing. Georgia would play the same schools every year, and then rotate one out. And you know, Georgia almost never played Tennessee. They almost never played Alabama. Georgia played them three times. Played them once in Athens, and then obviously played them for the national championship in the Sugar Bowl. So John Majors did an incredible job at Pittsburgh. Also, it didn't hurt the fact that his first year in 1973, they let him sign 70 guys, so that didn't hurt. So.
See, I just love those old stories. That is so much fun to go back and look at. And as Tony, get ready to say goodbye to you, I do also want to mention that I know you had a good friend that passed away recently, Chris Dufresne, a terrific college football writer. When I think about sort of the version of you out on the West Coast, Chris Dufresne was a name that I thought of there. And while I have you on the phone, I just want to make sure that I passed on my personal condolences to you for that, because as I said before, Chris was a great college football writer, but I happen to know that he was also a friend of yours. And so I want to say I'm sorry for you for your loss on that. And obviously, you know, Dufresne's legacy in college football as a guy that's covered this sport is certainly prodigious there as well. So it's a loss for all of us, but it's a loss for you personally because I know you knew him well.
Well, thank you, Brandon. I appreciate that. You know, Chris, I wrote that his writing style was loved just as much in South Georgia as it was Southern California.
Yeah.
His was a style that everybody enjoyed. Funny as all get out. Great, sharp writing. And we lost, he's 62 years old. We lost him way too soon.
Let me also find out as we say goodbye what you got coming up here in terms of preseason stuff, expectations for the upcoming season. If we want to connect more with you online, the work that you're doing, how can we find you?
Well, Chris Spring was one of my partners in a website that we call TMG, which stands for the Media Guides. We are under the Sports Illustrated umbrella. So you can read my stuff and the other partners on that site is at si.com/TMG, si.com/TMG. And we all write several times a week. And so I'll be writing a couple of times a week for that. And then stand here and ready for anything the SEC Network needs me to do. And so it's going to be a busier June than it normally would be. Normally I run away and hide in June. And,
yeah.
Now I got nowhere to run. I'm hunkered down here in Dunwoody, so we'll do our best. But it's gonna be, we got a lot of stuff to cover, because we feel confident we're going to play college football. We just don't know what it's going to look like.
Yeah, Tony, that's first of all the exact way we like you. We like you on standby, ready for the college football news wherever it might break, and I think that's a good way to end it. I do think we're going to have a season in terms of how it's going to look, maybe a little weirder than we're used to, but compared to where we may have been a couple of months ago, not really knowing even the outlook for actually games being played, we're in a much better place now than it seemed like we were, like, say, late March, I think, for sure.
Yep, just everybody stay safe.
That's exactly right. Tony, thanks for your time. I really appreciate that.
Sure, Brandon.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
All right, before we move on the rest of our SEC Through and talk about some of the things that are going on in the world of sports, I want to take a moment to talk about an entity, a group that, you know, I just really believe in the work that they're doing because I know of how valuable it can be for you. It's my friends at the Technical College System of Georgia. What I like about them is the education process they can provide for you is one of these things that doesn't come attached with a lot of debt, whether it's some education opportunities might, and can put you on the path towards a rewarding career right away. It's the kind of work, it's the kind of education that provides real-world training that can kind of get you going. Let me tell you more about this because there are a few things with the Technical College System of Georgia I think you need to know. They're offering free access to several self-paced online, that means you kind of go at your own rate, basic soft skills courses that encompass variety topics useful in any work environment. So if you want to improve your skills, just be better a part of the job market, this is certainly a good way to do that. The Technical College System of Georgia also offers a wide variety of professional development training options, including telework and telecommuting, which is obviously really important right now. So lock down your job skills, improve your business etiquette, do all of that with the Technical College System of Georgia. And there's a website to give you. If you're watching, you're going to obviously be able to see this better. If you're listening, I want to say this a couple of times. It's a gvtc.tcsg.edu/econ. DEV. So this is kind of a mouthful. I certainly realize that. If you'll just search the Technical College System of Georgia online, if you're listening radio podcasts, it's a very easy way to find that. On video, you can obviously see this on your screen. You can probably take a screenshot of that and go check that out. The truth is, if you're listening radio and podcast, it may be worth pulling up the video just to see this website on your screen. But it's a good way to kind of dive into this. Sometimes the websites are a little long. It's sort of hard to sum it up in a small number of words. But if you search the Technical College System of Georgia, Technical College System of Georgia online, you will find exactly what you need for that. And this is one of those deals where I truly believe in the work that they're doing because I see the rewarding careers that come out on the other side of that. So it's my pleasure to help tell their story here on our program here today. Moving on to our SEC Through just for a moment. So I thought this was interesting yesterday. A little bit of reaction to Florida coach Dan Mullen going on the Pat McAfee show. McAfee's kind of outspoken college football analyst, former punter. You know, he's kind of a fixture online, and he has his little show, very similar, I guess, to what we're doing right here. Dan Mullen makes an appearance on there and makes a prediction that he thinks the Gators are going to go undefeated. Let me read the quote here, and, you know, I guess do with this what you will. He says, "I'm not guaranteeing they're going to go undefeated because, to be honest with you, I have two national championship rings here at Florida, and we didn't go undefeated in either of those two seasons, but we still won the national championship." Mullen says that when I look at our schedule every year, I assume we're going to go undefeated. If I looked at it the other way and said, "Hey, I don't see us winning that game," I guess I'd tell the coaches, "Hey, why don't you guys go home? We're not going to win this one anyway. So this time of year, you assume you go undefeated every year." Now, I think that Mullen said a lot of dumb stuff. Honestly, in this particular case, I can't find much fault, much grief with that. You know, the idea that, you know, he's, you know, constantly bragging about national championships won. I do think there's an exchange rate for championships that you won as an offensive coordinator as opposed to what you've done there as a head coach. And it's pretty clear that, you know, Mullen's whole gimmick at Florida is trying to kind of tie back to that, you know, Urban Meyer era. But, you know, listen, there's some obvious problems with it. As I've said before, it's the Florida fans online sometimes who are the first to kind of point out, "Hey, it's been since 1980 since Georgia has won a national championship." Well, y'all, I didn't tell you this. 2006, 2008, these, you know, most recent Florida national championships, to the current recruits, I say this all the time, but it's, you know, leaders are repeaters. There are certain things that need to be said all the time. To current recruits, Florida has not won a national championship in the modern era either. Now, to me, I'm 43. I have vivid memories of what happened, and they're all unpleasant memories. I have vivid memories of the Urban Meyer era. But the average recruit doesn't even know that Urban Meyer coached at Florida and has to be reminded that Dan Mullen was the offensive coordinator. That's clearly why Mullen keeps doing that over and over again. So listen, Mullen's 100% right to say, well, look, of course you think you're going to win all the games. There's a lot of other dumb stuff that Mullen has said. This is not necessarily rising to that level for me. And difficult to shift gears to something a little bit more serious, but a couple of ACC programs dealing with some problems here. I didn't mention this yesterday just because it just seems so heavy. But Clemson assistant coach Danny Pierman, you know, allegation, not even allegation, I guess he's acknowledged that he used the N-word during practice, and the circumstances around how it was used, I guess there seems to be some confusion still out there on that, but this has created a very, very uncomfortable situation for Dabo Swinney, the Clemson coach. I'm not really quite sure how all of this gets resolved. The truth is, I'm not even really following that story all that closely, but it's not a very pleasant situation, certainly for the people involved, and obviously we'll keep our eye on what's going on there. Then you have this, and I guess I'm only partially even aware of this, but Mike Norvell, the Florida State coach, allegedly gives a quote to a reporter about how he's been handling the ongoing turmoil in our life here. And in the quote that he gave, he said that he's been speaking to each of his players individually and basically has taken time to speak to all of them. A Florida State player has come out and said, no, that did not happen. And basically they are, you know, players are refusing to work out because of that. The player who said this is not just any player either. It's Marvin Wilson, who's a terrific, terrific defensive lineman. So, you know, obviously the truth would be the truth no matter who said it, but the fact that it comes from such a prominent player on the Florida State roster makes things even more challenging. So I'm not quite sure where this goes either, but two of the most well-known ACC programs find themselves dealing with some turmoil right now. Florida State because of what Marvin Wilson is saying that Mike Norvell didn't say, and Clemson because of what one assistant coach apparently did say. This is a little bit of a mess for both sides, and we will follow it and see where it goes, and we'll make that your SEC through. And here on Dog Nation Daily, presented today by Merriweather and Tharp, I want to get back to the discussion about the Georgia Bulldogs here for a moment, as players, the incoming freshmen, you'll start to see appearances from them on campus here soon. Georgia players also on their way back ahead of the workouts, voluntary workouts that are going to begin for Georgia on June 8th. When Kirby Smart met with reporters last week, he went into a little bit more detail about exactly what these workouts are going to look like and the process for returning players back to campus. This is kind of tedious, to be honest with you, but it's at least interesting because of how specific and detailed Smart is about all the stuff that's going to go on here. So here's Kirby Smart on the process of players returning, which is beginning even as I'm speaking right now. Here's Kirby Smart.
Well, they're all coming back on their own, you know what I mean? So it's not like they're going to be brought back in stages. We haven't identified an exact number of players that will come back because, again, that's voluntary. So, but as far as what we will do in our protocol, Ron was on a committee that made a lot of decisions, and they had infectious disease personnel. They had representatives of every university, doctors, trainers, staff. I mean, everybody's involved in that decision. But when you say, how are we going to bring them back? We're going to bring them back prior to June 8th so that they can get a medical workup. I mean, they've got to have extensive physical. They've got to have COVID tests. They got to have a lot of things done prior to June 8th. So they've got to get back prior to June 8th.
How you do anything is how you do everything. And Kirby Smart clearly approaches football with like this insatiable desire to control every detail. And sometimes that's great. And sometimes maybe that's not, you know, the most perfect demeanor. But once again, how you do anything is how you do everything. And when you listen to him talk there, he's taking that same approach seemingly to how he's dealing with player returning from the coronavirus. And this is no meathead. This is not one of these, you know, guys who only knows football and only cares about winning and everything else be damned. He's pretty clearly taking this seriously because he's obviously got a great incentive to take good care of his players and be ready for an upcoming season. So many watchful eyes on what's going on here. He'd be a fool not to, and Kirby Smart's obviously no fool. More details of exactly what Georgia is doing as players get ready to come back, Kirby again.
So you say, how will they be brought back? They'll come back on their own. We'll have workout groups that are spaced out per the protocol that Ron and the committee came up with. They'll come in and do a really light workout initially because we want to bring them back slowly. They'll work out in smaller groups than traditionally before, probably 20 or so guys to a group. And of the 20 that come in, they'll be subdivided into groups of seven. So you're looking at a seven-person rotation in a 12,000-square-foot weight room. And they'll be spaced out. So there's a lot of protocol that goes into it. And I don't have time to go into the detail of every session they have. There'll be a cleaning crew that comes through and cleans where we are, from the indoor to the weight room. And there'll only be one door in, one door out. Won't be using the locker room. I mean, there's a lot of different things that people don't understand go into this. And I think that our players even are getting educated that it's not going to be the normal, well, I walk in and I go to my locker and I get stuff and I go work out and I shower. It's going to be completely different. And a lot of that is controlled by our state, because we're adhering to the policies of our state in terms of workout protocol, showers, and locker room usage.
So I happened to be at a shopping mall briefly yesterday for a moment, and this whole one door in, one door out thing, a lot of the stores are doing that same thing. Now, some stores already only have one door, but you know, this idea that Georgia and its football return is going to look very much like the rest of the state, hearing Smart speak there does remind me of some of the things that I have seen. I haven't really been out a ton lately. I did have a great lunch yesterday at Marlowe's Tavern, saw a lot of this kind of stuff in place. A lot of the retail stores kind of doing some of the same kind of stuff. You do see that going on. So what Kirby says they're doing, you kind of see with your own eyes other places there as well. All right, as we get ready to wrap up today, I want to take a brief moment to mention something I think is really cool. I didn't know this, maybe I should have. You know how all the coaches in college sports have their, like, tweet they send out? They can't mention recruits by name, but they have kind of like their winking gesture to let you know they got to commit. Well, apparently, Georgia women's basketball coach, the Lady Dogs coach, Joni Taylor, has got the coolest one of all, and I'm embarrassed that I'm only now just becoming aware of this. Apparently, when Georgia gets a basketball commit, she does a Gladys Knight-style leaving on a midnight train to Georgia thing. Kirby Smart retweeted this, so I saw it. Joni Taylor said, got another one on that midnight train? And I scrolled through her timeline. She's used this at least once before. Maybe she's been doing this a million times, or maybe it just started. I guess I just don't really know. But how is this hiding in front of our eyes all these years and coaches weren't always are already using this? Good job by Joni Taylor on that. How about Gator Hater Updater? How about 1,314 days? We'll see you tomorrow, Dog Nation Daily, presented by Meriwether and Tharp.